Hello, everyone. You're listening to America Meditating Radio. We collect wisdom, inspire each other, and empower hearts on demand 24/7. I'm Sister Jenna, host of the syndicated America Meditating Radio. Join us as we talk one-on-one with leading experts who answer life's most compelling questions, because in a world of uncertainty, we need answers right here, right now. America Meditating Radio, a show for everyone to learn more about this amazing thing called life.
Anxiety about imperfection. Not to be numb or uncaring, just simply without anxiety, accepting yourself just as you are. Body, with this appearance, these behaviors, these life circumstances. One of the most reassuring lines from the Zen tradition was written by Zen Master Dogen. And it goes like this: to be in harmony with the oneness of things is to be without anxiety about imperfection. Now, I love this teaching because it assumes imperfection. It assumes that these bodies and minds will be reactive, that will grasp and get attached, and that we'll be angry at times and fearful, and that we'll even hurt the beings that we love the most out of our fear and our confusion. It assumes imperfection and says what matters is how do we relate to that. There's a real sense of shame, and that shame ties us up in knots. And it gives rise to the most profound sense of self-aversion. And what this means is that for awakening beings of our time, people on the spiritual path, that paying attention to shame, paying attention to self-aversion, is a necessary gateway for awakening. It's not something to get rid of. Rather, the way we pay attention to self-aversion is actually the ground of the path. Not to be numb or uncaring, just simply without anxiety, accepting yourself just as you are.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to America Meditating Radio. That was Tara Brock on Monique Road album, Accepting Yourself Just the Way You Are. Can be a big call for many of us, isn't it? But it feels almost as if that's exactly what we have to do, especially in the times that we find ourselves in this country and around the globe. There's something definitely shifting, and we're being called to revisit who we really are, why we breathe here on the planet. How am I really supposed to be with another human being who is also a child of the divine? And if we find that we are polluted at the time that we speak the words that we're about to speak or choose the choice we're about to make, and we're not feeling good within, we just know that we've broken the reason why we're here. We're not living our fullest. And for me, what I've noticed, in order for me and you and all of us on the planet to live our lives to our fullest, we need to apply more virtues. I need to be more kind, thoughtful, curious, regal, royal. All of these qualities that can really help us to breathe healthier and to live healthier relationships. And I know more than anyone else it's a time, because here I am living in an environment that is filled with so much love. I've been given purpose, which I show up to every day with love. Some days are better than others. I'm around some of the most affluent people and some of the individuals who are struggling to just put bread on the table. Whether you're Republican or Democrat, whether you're a nice person or what might be deemed not so nice, and still, I can feel there's something in me that needs some addressing. It needs a change. It needs, I don't know, it needs more love. It needs more understanding and more appreciation. A few months ago, we were in Florida, and my staff and I, we were just, in a meeting, and then after the meeting was over, there was food getting prepared, and we were getting ready to sit down, and someone was listening to Super Soul Sunday. And the conversation on Super Soul Sunday with Oprah just grabbed my attention, because she was speaking to someone that I felt a lot of resonance to, and there was one part that I recalled in the interview that touched me, that I just need some friends, to be spending a little bit more time with friends and constantly in the sort of all the rules and the checks and the marks that you have to do when you're in a very organized setting, that sometimes you just need time to just be you. Today gives me great privilege to welcome our next guest. Barbara Brown Taylor is a best-selling author, teacher, and former, Episcopal priest. Her first memoir, Leaving Church, won an Author of the Year, an award from the Georgia Writers Association in 2006. Her next two books, An Altar in the World, which was released in 2010, and Learning to Walk in the Dark, earned places on the New York Times bestseller list. She has served on the faculties of Piedmont College, Columbia Theological Seminary, Cadler School of Theology at Emory University, McAfee School of Theology at Mercer University, and so much more. In 2014, Time included her on its annual list of most influential people, and in 2015, she was named Georgia Woman of the Year. She received the President's Medal at the Chautauqua Institute in New York in 2016, and her 14th book, Holy Envy, was released by Harper One in 2019. Today gives me my privilege to, I feel like I'm welcoming a soul sister. Hi.
Hello, Sister Jenna. Thank you for that introduction.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, when I heard your conversation, there was one part that just touched me, and I said, yes, I can totally relate to that. And so, of course, I would love to be able to talk with you for 7 hours, because I know that you can go on and on and on. Mm-hmm. But for our listeners who mostly are millennials, there's pretty much of a 50% share of individuals who are
curious to take the journey inwards. And there's another 50% of our audience that they are taking the journey inwards and they tend to coin themselves awakened, but they're looking for tools to stay awake, right? So I'm just giving you an idea. Your new book takes readers into your classroom at a small rural college in Georgia where you taught world religions for almost 20 years. How did teaching the great wisdom traditions for that long actually affect your understanding of your own Christian faith?
It increased my, let's call it, theological humility to a great degree when I discovered the depths, not the stereotypes, but the depths of practice and teaching in the major world traditions. It humbled me in wonderful ways, made me kind of more of a neighbor, more of a sibling than my Christian tradition has often acted, more as sort of a lord, an invader, an evangelist. So I first of all was humbled, and second of all, enriched. It's as if my treasure chest, Christian treasure chest, all of a sudden enlarged and sat next to treasure chests from all over the world. It changed the way I saw my neighbor, changed the way I saw Jesus, you know, the exemplar in my tradition, and changed the way I imagined God. I don't see God every day.
Can we share about that? What was the change that occurred inside of you in terms of your recognition of God and Jesus? I'm curious.
There is a way in which Christians can speak and act very exclusively. And pretty quickly,
really?
Oh, yeah, really? If you've got millennials listening, they know, because that is a crowd dear to my heart. But and then can very quickly recruit the divine to that purpose. And the major way my mind and life was changed was by going back to the central teachings of the tradition and realizing, no, that's an expansive and inclusive energy, not an exclusive and dominating energy. So my view of even the central stories changed. I can now read them in a whole different way than they were taught to me.
Me too.
As an opening up and not a shutting down.
Me too. What I understood maybe 30 years ago when I first started, it did seem like it was a very exclusive club. And something very privately in you feels like you were better than the rest, even though you might not say that in your wordings, but your attitude had that energy. And you would always attract a few folks who'd be like, "You think you're better than we are?" And then it'll hit you. And you'd be like, no. But I'll tell you, what you shared touched me because it is the importance of expanding your awareness and knowledge of the all that can make us be more rooted in what our faith is and live it truthfully, maybe more from a spiritual perspective versus a very dogmatic, and this is how you do it, and this is how you prove you're a Christian or a Jew or a Hindu.
Love your word all. I love your word all even more than the word one, which, you know, I favor a lot, but one has a sameness to it, and all has this gorgeous multiplicity to it. So I like your word.
Well, tell us more about the title of your book. It's Envy, One of the Seven Deadly Sins for Christians. What distinguishes holy envy from all the other kinds?
Well, I stole the phrase from a biblical scholar named Christopher Stendhal, and he said, when you're studying other religions, leave room for holy envy. I didn't know what he meant. I just love the words together, because so many students in my college classes would go on a class visit to a place of devotion or study or worship, and if they saw anything that seemed divine to them or of God or lovely to them, they felt like they were betraying their own tradition. They felt disloyal. And so anything like envy or desire, envy is probably a strong word, but they would feel bad about it. And I think when you put holy in front of it, it begs for another hearing. And it says that to see something lovely and desirable in another tradition is to make the world bigger and perhaps find a way of coming home to your own tradition intent on finding some buried treasure there that another tradition woke you up to. So it seems to me a positive and not a negative. And holy envy changes that.
I love it. You know, it fascinates me, the things that we tend to believe in Indian culture. You know, there are all these gurus, sadhus, rishis, munis, and you're only allowed really one. And if you expand on that and go to two, there's sometimes this murmur going on, you know, they can curse you. You'll be cursed if you have two. You can't leave your guru. You have to be with only one. And I can see the holy envy connecting to that because, again, sometimes the fear of people leaving your tribe and finding another tribe could be the genesis behind why are we so dogmatic at times when it comes down to our faith or our spiritual or our religious practice. What are your thoughts?
My husband is a practitioner of Lakota, Native American way. He's the one who taught me something about that. He said that these great traditions, we could substitute great gurus, are like power lines, power cords. And you don't want a jumble of them down on the ground, you know, crisscrossing and spitting electricity. So he taught me that sometimes it's just respecting the powerfulness of the teaching that says stick with one. You know, so that you don't get shocked unduly here, you know, that it might be a way to channel the power without crisscrossing your wires. So that helped me see it in a different way, that because I settle on a way, a teacher, a guru, has more to do with my own limitations and perhaps spiritual focus than it does about the badness or inadequacy of the other ways. It's practical, almost practical. You've heard the saying you can, you know, choose to dig a lot of shallow wells or put your energy into digging one deep one. So that wisdom seems to be in there somewhere. But like you, I don't know many people who only have one teacher. Do you?
No, I don't. Not nowadays, with social media.
I have a number of teachers.
I know. But you know what I've noticed for myself, Barbara, and maybe you too, is that you just grow more when you are open to hearing how someone else is doing life. Yeah,
I do truly believe that, and because it's not always warm and fuzzy. Sometimes somebody tells me how they do life, and as lovingly as I can, I think to myself, I don't want to go there. I just found some place that I, you know, good for you, and I don't want to go there. but even that shows me something. It shows me something larger than what I had before. So you know, any way in which we can, I don't know, broaden each other's heart.
It does, you know.
Seems to be wonderful.
Yeah, I was interviewed to Burning Man 1 year to do something, and I said, you know, I really think that must be a very powerful experience. And I respect all of my New Age brothers and sisters, but I'm really not New Age, anything near it, even though I meditate. And there are people that say it's different. But I remembered that I had to check myself. And I checked, well, I can't be around something that's not physically, I can't, you know, I need to feel clean all the time. You know, I need to sit and eat properly as if I'm eating with Queen Elizabeth. I need to, you know, you're set in your ways and they're not always easy to break through. And it's interesting because you had an effect in your life when your holy envy, you know, going through all these teachings of spiritual teaching and learning and teaching world religions, the holy envy impacted you. Didn't you find yourself trying new things or did you just stick to what you always knew?
I tried a lot of new things, some of which I would talk about and some I wouldn't. But my natural curiosity has always led me, whether it's in travel or in my own backyard, to go figure out what the neighbors are up to. So I have to beware of my tendency to do what I call spiritual shoplifting. But, you know, when I learned about the Jewish Sabbath being 25 hours of no work and no commerce and you know, simply being in the presence of the divine, I borrowed that. I did a version of that. I, you know, pilgrimage, you know, learn about the pilgrimage to here or there and go off on one of my own. And I've experimented with, well, meditation is a daily part of life. So, and yoga is a pretty regular part of life. So all of those, I would say, are borrowing. And I always, I've got to deal with my carefulness about borrowing because I don't want to appropriate another tradition or try to assimilate it, but I also can't seem to stay away.
Yeah, I get that. I've been exploring a lot more, I don't know, I've been listening, expanding, entering even more rooms of thought, not because I'm uncomfortable where I am, but inside I just want to value everyone more, and I don't know how to value them unless I'm with them and I can understand them. Do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, and then I pick up a lot. I pick up a lot along the way. Like, I didn't even remember the Sabbath. I need to take that over because I work way too much. So with teaching all these students for two decades, which religion would you say you saw that they were most drawn to, and which ones did you observe they might have resisted the most?
I noticed a kind of natural attraction to Buddhism, and I think that's largely because, in a way, it sort of fills in the other side of a lot of Christian practice, because, you know, the Buddhist teachings are not theistic. They're about life and suffering and desire. And students could entertain those without feeling disloyal to their own traditions. They could think of it as a life philosophy. So they were drawn to that. And then I think, of course, at the popular level, many of them had heard of or read a Twitter feed from the Dalai Lama, or they'd run across Tara Brach or, you know, Pema Chodron. And so those teaching struck students as not threatening and very peaceful. And of course, you know, the one they were most fearful of was Islam. And that had everything to do with how their imaginations had been fed by Hollywood and media and internet in ways that only left them one face for Muslims, who are as varied as, you know, any other tradition. We had a saying in our classroom: when you've met one Buddhist, you've met one. And when you've met one Muslim, you've met one. You know, to try, as you said, to get to know the people, to be with people, and not just buy the stereotype, the pictures that is given us.
Yes, yes, yes. And that requires, I think, a lot of honesty with the self, to just keep being curious about other people. I think you need to be very honest with you. You say in the book that information doesn't necessarily change people, but relationships do. How do you see that play out in the classroom? How did you see that play out in the classroom?
That's a difficult thing to admit, but I did realize that all my measurable course objectives and quiz scores and graded short papers were going to fall from students' memories about 29 minutes after they left the classroom. But what they remembered years afterwards, because they would write me emails, is things they had seen, and they recognized them because of, you know, the world religions class. They went into a restaurant, or they met someone, or they saw someone dressed in a certain way, or they saw a house of worship, and the shock of recognition that made them more able to enter into relationship, even if they didn't walk into the place. I don't know. It gave them a place to land, person to person. So, you know, all the vocabulary words I made them memorize are gone. But they remember Swami Yogashananda at the Vedanta Center, you know, or they remember the Lama who taught them at the Tibetan Center, and or the Imam they heard. That's who they remember.
Interesting. Personally, at where you are in your journey right now, what are you working on at this time?
At this time, I'm working on this book, Holy Envy, coming out of my head and into other people's hands. And I'm undergoing that out-of-body experience where you find out what your book is about by listening to what other people say. And it is wonderful, but I guess it's, I don't know, I never had children, but it must, you know, releasing your four-year-old to kindergarten and getting teacher's reports on how your child is doing. But it's a wonderful and disorienting time to release a book into the world and then see what comes back. I'm just going to say, a book is like putting a message in a bottle, and you never know where it will float up. I just talked to one man who read the book under the vapor lights in a football stadium while his child was at football practice. It's just wonderful, all the places the bottle washes up.
I bet. Are you planning to do a lot of book signings or tours with the book?
Yes, I'll. This will be 14 cities, and then I'll come home when all that's over and the adrenaline leaves. And
are you coming to D.C. at all?
No, D.C. is not on the list. We're going West Coast and then a lot of regional Southeast, but I will get to the museum. I will. I'll get there under my own power the next time I'm in D.C.
you promised you're on the East Coast and you're coming by, we're going to do something with you here. And every book signing here is always a special experience for everyone because they're in a meditation center, so they have to behave. And then everybody, and the audience is so great and they're very receiving. And because it's so, you know, cultural and diverse, I think everybody feels very much at home here. Any final thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners in terms of what would you give us as your best advice for how we need to move along more in this single life?
Keep listening to this program. I'm serious about that. I feel very at home. I feel very at home with you and with everything I know about what you're creating in the world. So this is a wonderful place to start. And even waiting to come online with you, you know, I heard favorite authors being quoted, and I think that you have created both a haven and a place of challenge for people who are wanting capital M more of the divine in their lives. So I'm very grateful to you for inviting me to talk with you.
Well, it's been my honor to have you on air with me, and it's funny because I feel the same with you, but I knew that. I knew I was going to feel that with you, so I'm not even worried. But listen, can't wait to have you here in the nation's capital. Lots of good wishes in all that you do, and continue with your holy envy there.
Thank you so much, Sister Jenna. Thank you so much. Safe travels to you everywhere you go.
Thank you. Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye. What a wonderful conversation. That was the Reverend, amazing Barbara Brown Taylor, and she's got her new book out, Holy Envy, Finding God in the Faith of Others. Finding God in the Faith of Others. There's only one God. There's many of us. There are a lot of us out there, but there's only one source. So it's my pure invitation to you. Please get a copy of her book. Get out there. Please open up your world. Open up your heart. You see, when the sun shines, it doesn't choose who it's going to shine on. But if you've got an umbrella, you won't get the rays as powerfully as the one who's just basking in the sun. That's how I look at God. One God, all of us belong and come from that source. And he wants to shine so strongly on us if we will just let him. And value the person next to you who also looks like God's shining on them, but he's a Hindu, or he's a Jew, or he's an atheist. He could even be an agnostic. Value him. Hear him out. Ask him, who are you? What do you do? What do you think? When you look at the sun, what do you feel? You know, just talk to people, and don't keep walking around with judgments on how you think they are, all right? So remember, no one can take away your happiness unless you give them permission. And we really are here to love each other the same. So please, let us continue to amplify the quality of love. It is an innate strength in you. And if anyone tries to convince you you're not that, please, just shower them with more love, because you are that. Here's Lifted from Lucinda Drayton. You take care and be kind to yourself. Yes, everyone. And now we'll just pause for some announcements from our very, very trusted sponsors.
Sacred Space is a safe space drop-in center for youth seeking a place to be, to find a short refuge from violence or an abusive environment, to find loving kindness, compassion, and to experience the creative medicine of art and expression. It is a place of the heart and soul awakening. Sacred Space in Sacramento, California, an innovative program by our community, all for one and one for all.
Hello, I am Dr. Margaret Fitzpatrick, president of St. Thomas Aquinas College, a vibrant, student-centered institution located in the New York City metropolitan area. St. Thomas Aquinas College provides a quality education in our schools of arts and science, business, and education. Enroll at St. Thomas Aquinas College, where we promote social responsibility through community engagement and create responsible citizens and leaders. Visit us at www.stac.edu.
In this meditation, I invite you to become aware of the two types of consciousness that reside within the soul. Let us choose the consciousness of light over the darkness of past stories, the history that gets into our way. Let us now remember our connection to the supreme energy, the being of light. For far too long, we have allowed the external forces to dictate our inner force. And at this time, I choose to get off the grid and step inside the heart, to be myself. I choose to no longer be under the influence of what the world tells me, what my parents have told me, my spouse, friends, or anyone who has been a negative influence in my life. In this meditation, I stand strong in the original, eternal, imperishable worth of the soul. I, the being of light, the soul of power, I step into the heart. And I become a being of love, a being of light and goodness. Hi everyone, welcome back. That was Gary White, Dreamweaver, and a meditation track from Off the Grid Into the Heart by yours truly, available on iTunes, Amazon, and everywhere. I'm Sister Jenna. You've been listening to America Meditating Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Did you enjoy that conversation? Because you can also listen to it on Spotify or in iTunes, 24/7, anytime, anywhere. I do trust we all have inner power to become our very best. When we listen with curiosity to learn more, we grow. So thanks so much for tuning in, and do be easy on yourself. Take care.